to Bubble Genius.
Hey, yeah, I'm looking for something for my ma, like a present. She likes stuff that smells real nice.
Oh, okay, let's see. We have lots of lovely bath and body treats. Something for everyone. How about make like a tree?
Make like a tree? Sheesh, some service. Make like a tree? Hey, why don't you take a long walk off a short pier?
No, I mean, it's our make like a tree soap. A set of 8 mini soap leaves in a delightful, spicy, woodsy scent.
Leaves that lather up?
Yup. And like all of our spectacular soaps, they're 100% vegan-friendly and handmade right here in the U.S. of A.
Soap? That does smell real good. Hey, you're not saying my mom smells, are you? Wait.
Oh, no, of course not. You said she likes stuff that smells real nice. And if there's one thing we've got, it's a huge selection of scrumptious-smelling suds.
Well, all right then. Just so you're not. All right, give me one of them. Makes like trees. And wrap it up real pretty.
You got it. Bubble Genius, where there's something for everyone. Handmade by us in the U.S.
BubbleGenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
So I was glued to last night's Indiana Senate debate between pro-life Democrat Joe Donnelly and even pro-lifer Republican Richard Murdoch. Here's Murdoch when questioned on abortion.
I struggled with it myself for a long time, but I came to realize life is that gift from God. And I think even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, that it is something that God intended to happen.
Okay. Murdoch's comments upset many Hoosiers and also possibly God. It really makes him look like a terrible gift giver. I will say, God, next time you're stumped with picking out a good gift for the ladies, just go with an edible arrangement. And we've got an important election coming up, so I just want to address my fellow conservatives who are running for office this year. I just want to give you a little advice on how to handle yourself if in the middle of a debate or while casually talking to reporters, you feel yourself about to share your views on rape. I want you to stab yourself in the eye with your pencil. Okay? Just jam it in there. Really work it around. Just back and forth. Up in your skull cavity, okay? See if you can get it in there and sever the portion of your brain that stores the word rape.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Radio goes with life. A salt and pepper, a fork and knife. Radio goes with life.
Here we go!
And if I have to listen to one more gray-faced man with a $2 haircut explain to me what rape is, I'm gonna lose my mind! I watch these guys, and I'm like, what is happening? Am I a secretary on Mad Men? What's happening?
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, October 25th, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez.
Yep.
We're brought to you every week by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. They've got lots of Halloween stuff for you to buy. Halloween soaps and other fun things. Their anatomically correct beating heart. Well, it doesn't beat. It would be very difficult to create a bar of soap that actually moved. But they're working on it because they're geniuses at Bubble Genius.
I want to get that transplanted into me.
Yeah.
A heart transplant using a piece of soap.
So, obviously, we know one of the things that we're going to be talking about this week. And it clearly, Robert Murdoch. Love that. That Colbert bit is so genius. I truncated it for air, but if you can see the whole clip of Stephen Colbert talking about team rape, as he calls them. I mean, he went through all of the Republicans who have in some way tried to redefine rape.
I like rape. I do. Do you know why? Because the Republicans have won me over. They made me realize that rape is a good thing. Suddenly, I'm all about rape. I'm very pro-rape. Thanks to the Republicans. God bless you guys.
It's a gift from God, Chess.
It is. It's a gift from God. I'm not going to defend Murdoch because he's obviously a jackass. But, I'm still trying to figure out whether his point was that, and either is reprehensible, that the child itself is the gift from God or the rape is the gift from God.
Yeah. I mean, whatever he intended to say, it clearly came out that some aspect of rape is a gift.
That's exactly it. I mean, again, I think that in the thing that I wrote for Daily Banter, I gave him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt and said that that what he's talking about is, which again, I think is just ridiculous. And I mean, I could go off on it for the backward ass religious reasons because I don't believe in any of that, but I'm not even going to bother with that. But yeah, just the entire fact that there is someone who sees pregnancy from rape as, well, there's your silver lining. You know, look, hey, right. If nothing else, you got a little something out of it. You got, look at that. You got God made a baby. Isn't that wonderful? Sure, cool. You got held at knife point. Or you got, you know, some frat douchebag ass was on top of you, or something else, some other sort of forcible penetration that you didn't ask for of your person. But hey, you know what? Look on the bright side. There's a baby. Everybody loves babies.
God, what this is entirely has to do with, obviously, is the ongoing Republican effort to just roll back the clock 40 years and not only ban abortion in all cases without exception, but to obviously return to that period of time where women were kind of second class citizens, subservient to the whims of men. And
yeah, I agree with that. I think that's exactly what's going on. I think that's the most reprehensible facet of the push that Republicans, the bizarre, Paleolithic fetishization that they have of this old-fashioned America where they were in charge.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, much like 10 years ago, it would have been inconceivable to have a debate about torture and whether or not the United States should torture people. It's inconceivable to me today that this has even come up during an election year. And it's come up multiple times. You have Todd Akin with his legitimate rape stuff. Steve King. Never heard of a girl getting pregnant from statutory rape.
Don't even. King is just, King, was it this week that King had like his one little, like one or two paragraphs that just hit every single wingnut button humanly possible?
Yeah.
He is honestly, he's a circus act.
Yeah.
And he's a human circus act.
Colbert referred to him as the angry dinner roll. He looks like, and the picture of him, he did actually look like an angry dinner roll. It was hilarious. Then there's this the Tom Smith guy who equated rape to out of wedlock pregnancy. Richard Rivard from Wisconsin. Some girls, they rape so easy.
Right. They rape easy.
Yeah. Yeah. This is your Republican Party of 2012. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to delegitimize, they're trying to undermine the word rape and all of the violence that goes along with it in order to shoehorn in this constitutional personhood amendment that would not allow for any exception in regards to rape. And what this is also doing is this is defining the terms of what kinds of abortions can be allowed on the moving the conversation to the exceptions and not about the basic fact that women should be allowed to decide what happens in their own body. Now we've got to sit here and defend the things that should be commonplace, the exceptions in the discussion.
The thing about the Republicans that I think is among the many things that's different between the right and left right now is that the Republicans do not let anything go. They will continue to refight wars that they've lost over and over and over again until they win. That's just the way they are.
Yeah.
You know, they don't accept. They will never accept that, look, this is, you know, the way a vast portion of America wants something. This is what they, you know, happen to agree with. It's been this way for a long time, to great success. But if it goes against what they want, they will keep fighting, and they will do it over and over again. And I mean, this is obviously, abortion has been at the very top of their list for quite a while.
Well, and what they're doing is, they're like everything else, they're defining the terms of the debate. I mean, what I was trying to get at before was, suddenly we're just defending the exceptions and we're losing sight of the nut of the issue, which is, this shouldn't even be an issue at all. Especially coming from small government conservatives who, as Barney Frank famously said, want to shrink government so small that it fits into your uterus.
Right.
And so this is all part of this larger national effort that's starting at the state level. Then, you know, right, we have a Republican presidential candidate who is absolutely going to change everything at the federal level. And then
the average Republican thought process is, I mean, at least these days, is government should never interfere with your right to make as much money as you want, no matter how many people you hurt. Mm-hmm. And government, on the low end, government should never interfere with your right to allow household appliances to rust in your front yard. However, government can absolutely interfere with your right to an abortion if you happen to be a minority, your civil rights, so on and so forth.
And their reasoning is, obviously, and I'm not breaking any news with this, but their reasoning is there's this other person in their terms. There's this other person involved. And it's not just about the pregnant mother.
Right.
It's about this other zygote, embryo, fetus person in their terms again. And what they've done is they've prioritized, and I always get flack for this. What they've done is, by using the term I'm about to use, what they've done is they've prioritized the entity that's kind of, you know, in the strictest scientific sense, a parasite.
Why did I know you'd say that?
Well, look, I'm not saying it in the necessarily the pejorative sense, but in a scientific way, it is fully dependent. Until that person or fetus or whatever you want to call it is birthed, that entity is fully dependent on being attached to the mother. So in every legal sense, except in some of these red states where they're slowly whittling away at that legal definition, that other entity is secondary.
I understand that thought process. And I'll say something that got me a lot of flack.
Does it involve the word parasite?
It does not involve the word parasite, no. You know, a while back, one of the most, I don't want to say controversial, but one of the things that got sort of the most interaction between me and the people who read the blog and the people who read Huffington Post that I've ever written had to do with when I wrote about abortion. And I'd never written about abortion. And I said that. I'm like, one of the subjects that I've stayed away from on the site is abortion, because it's such a hot button issue. And so many people have very, very passionate opinions about it that I actually think, to some extent, are all worth listening to, because I think it is a serious subject. And I think it's a serious subject even when you take religion out of it. Mm-hmm. That's the thing for me. You know, I don't approach it from the perspective of somebody who's religious. I don't do that whole, well, you know, the minute that sperm is shot inside your woman's womb, that's God at work right there. No, that's crap. I don't give a flying crap about God. It's nonsense to me. Mm-hmm. But I did... You know, I posed a question, sort of a philosophical question, and I genuinely did it just to pose the question. And I tried to sort of stay out of offering too much of an opinion one way or the other, because I wanted to see what people's thoughts were. And my argument was, is there a point when a fetus is inside a mother, inside a woman, when you can look at that fetus and say, well, that is a child? And my argument was, if you can look at that, if you really do, if you get the ultrasound and you're like, that's a baby, then from a strictly logical perspective and rational perspective, then yes, the mother, if you can do that, the mother loses her right to be able to take that life. It just, I mean, you, and I think you actually said it in sort of a roundabout way today when you were talking, when you wrote about it earlier, about the personhood amendment, because that's the idea of the personhood amendment. The idea of the personhood amendment is, if we can slap, you know, humanity on that fetus and say that that's a person, then right then, that the rights of that of what's growing inside that woman are 100% equal to the rights of the mother, and really nothing that none of the mother's concerns, aside from possibly losing her life, supersede the right of that thing inside of her to live. Do you get where I'm coming from here?
Yeah. I mean,
posed it not as a religious question, because I don't give a crap about religion. Really, I can't stress that enough. And it's funny, the number of people, especially at Huffington, who were just like, well, obviously you're religious, right? And you're, you know, just trying to tell me what to do with my body. I'm like, first of all, I'm not trying to tell you what to do. I'm not. And I'm not religious at all. So I'm just looking at it strictly from the perspective of, look, if you do look at what's growing inside a woman, and you say, if there's a point, I don't know where the cutoff point is. I don't know when it becomes zygote to fetus to when you can actually look at it and say, you know, that's a baby. And the interesting thing is, you know, I got a lot of responses from people who said things like, you know, if I don't want it, it's not a baby. And I said, that's absolute nonsense. I mean, I said, from a strictly logical perspective, that's crap. Because if you wanted the child, whether you want it or not, does not affect it doesn't affect the physical characteristics or the human characteristics of what's growing inside of you. And, you know, if you're at 12 weeks, if you're at 12 weeks and you decide to have an abortion, or 15 weeks, let's say, and you decide to have an abortion, there may very easily be another couple that is, you know, gets an ultrasound of the fetus at 15 weeks and just cries with joy. So really, it has no physical bearing on whether or not that thing growing inside of you is a child. And I know I'm kind of rambling here, but that was sort of my point.
Yeah.
And I think I definitely agree with you that that's where they're going on the personhood amendment. They are trying to – it's an interesting end run, because I almost think that they're trying to do what I did without – but they have an ulterior motive, which I didn't, which is they're trying to, for religious reasons, trying to take religion out of it. And I literally said, I'm like, this has nothing to do with religion. I'm talking strictly from a scientific perspective. If you look at that and that's, well, it's a baby, then you lose all your rights. And that's a real issue.
I disagree with that, because I don't care if the fetus is in there doing a tap dance. As long as it's in there, that's the purview of the person, of the person that contains that fetus. As soon as we start passing laws that say the government can tell you what you can and can't do with the inside of your body when there is something that's potentially harmful, et cetera, then, I mean, then we're on down a very scary slope.
I agree with that. And I'm 100%, and, you know, one of the things that I said, is, you know, when I first started this piece that I wrote, is I think I even started it with, I'm like, you know, the old F. Scott Fitzgerald quote about the, you know, the test of a first-rate intellect, which I probably don't have. I blew that away years ago, is the ability to hold two opposing thoughts in mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm like, my two opposing thoughts are, I am 100% pro-choice, completely.
Yeah.
And at the same time, abortion for me, not all abortion, but there are some abortions, or there are times when I can look at it and say there is a moral dilemma there for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. And we're gonna talk about that after a break, right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Brand new Tragically Hip. Yeah, I totally missed the release of this album, which was like 3 weeks ago. They were one of my favorite bands, one of my top three favorite bands, and I completely forgot that their new album was coming out. I'm so wrapped up in politics. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you on this as far as being torn, because I'm personally, if I was pregnant, I would probably choose not to have an abortion. But I want to reserve that right to choose.
I agree, and I agree completely, and I also agree that it is not my purview. It is not my decision to make.
Yeah.
It truly is not. But, you know, that was sort of the moral dilemma that I kind of set up, which was that, you know, and obviously I think I definitely see your point, and certainly a lot of people argued with me. And by the way, and I said flat out, I'm like, as the comments just poured in, I'm like, look, this is a good debate. That's all we're doing. We're just having a debate. You know, we're just talking about, you know, it's like a freaking stupid, you know, I admit it. It's a stupid college philosophy class where you're sitting there discussing, existential crap.
No, well, I mean, yeah. And I think there are certain things, there are certain realities that that get missed along the way. And one of them, I believe, is that that in the strictest and most technical sense, life begins at conception. Now, that doesn't mean that the life is an individual, and that doesn't mean that the mother doesn't have full purview over what happens to that life as long as it's inside of her body. But there is a beginning of a life that occurs at conception. Whether that dictates that that life should have full 14th Amendment rights is a completely different story, and I would say no. That's the personhood amendment. That marula, that zygote that has just started, the cells have just started dividing, say that that thing deserves equal protection under the law.
No, I don't think it does.
Absolutely ridiculous, because then we're into just this weird phantom zone. It's weird, dangerous as all hell.
No, I agree with you. I do. Again, what I would come back with that, again, and I'm playing, I can't stress enough, I'm playing devil's advocate here, is I would worry that, I would wonder at least, if you were talking about the only real difference between, say, a baby that could live prematurely outside of the womb and a baby still inside the womb is essentially location. And if you say, well, the mother's keeping it alive via feeding it and so on, it's like, well, there are other methods of keeping that whatever it is alive now. And so that, once again, that's where the sort of moral dilemma comes up for me. And, the other thing is, sometimes I look at the gut reaction of it, and it's really interesting to see. You know me, I see everything through the media prism. But it's interesting for me to see the way, the sort of visceral reaction that that you have when you hear, and the media plays this up, when you hear that, a pregnant woman was murdered. Because then you really, at that moment, your mind kind of goes to, well, she wanted it, so it really is sort of like, I'm not saying it's like killing two people, but there's something especially awful about it. Yeah. Do you not agree?
No, I totally agree. And the same goes for, pregnant women who are smoking and drinking and all that stuff. They're just doing horrible things to their bodies while they're pregnant, doing drugs and just endangering that child is growing inside of them. And that, that's horrible. But what is the domain of the person? Where does the line between what government controls and what an individual controls, where is that drawn? And my contention is it's absolutely drawn at the borderline between being outside the body and inside the body.
That's an interesting point, though. I mean, that's a perfect point. You brought up the fact that I know a lot of times when you hear about these sort of stopping women from smoking who are pregnant, and I know that a lot of liberals have that concern that that's sort of a backdoor way to get into calling what's inside of the pregnant woman a person. I know that that's the point where a lot of people sort of like are champing at the bit, where they're it's like they're a caged animal, because on the one hand you really do want to say, look, a mother who's smoking while she's pregnant is a piece of crap.
Yes, and that's true.
Who's purposely going out of her way, smoking, drinking, doing drugs and all that. And you want desperately for something to say, look, you can't do that. If you do that, we will punish you. Society will punish you. But like you said, if you do that, then you are acknowledging that there's another life in there that has to be protected. And that's the sort of scary thing.
Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, there are some, I would say, somewhat valid arguments in favor of those sorts of laws in terms of how that baby would potentially have birth defects and things like that, that would end up becoming a burden on the healthcare system and so on and so on and so on. There's a law going through the state house in Pennsylvania where they're restricting the number of children you can have and still get food stamps. They're making an exception for cases of rape. If a woman has two kids and she's raped and has a third kid,
that's very clever.
Yeah, isn't it? And so she can still get food stamps, but here's the catch. She has to prove she's been raped.
Yeah.
And if she can't prove she's been raped, she doesn't get the food stamps. So, there's that. There's some of this moves us into the next topic of conversation, because now we got to talk about the process here. and what's happening between now and, well, over the next, let's say, 4 years as a block of time. And this also speaks to the stakes of the election. I think one of the most important stakes of the election, and it not only has to do with abortion, but it has to do with a wide range of other issues, campaign finance, immigration, etc. And that is the composition, the ideological composition of the Supreme Court. Now, if Mitt Romney wins, at least one justice, probably Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Realistically speaking, you know, she's 79 years old. She survived cancer twice. The odds are she's going to at least be resigning in the next 4 years. Maybe there's a thin chance if Romney wins, she'll hang on for those 4 years. But her health is not very good. And you know where I'm kind of leading with that without being disrespectful.
So she'll be dead.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
I love it by the way when you say past. I wrote that today. If she's passed, look, I hate that term. You die. That's it.
I know. We're talking about a justice of the Supreme Court. Anyway.
Being respectful, though.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be respectful of justice. Anyway, and then there's also Antonin Scalia, our favorite Supreme Court Justice Scalia. He's 76 years old. He's not the healthiest guy in the world either. So we could potentially have two turnovers in the Supreme Court. Mitt Romney is elected. We could have a court stacked 6-3. Conservative to liberal. That's scary. But then what could end up happening if Barack Obama wins re-election, there's the tables turn entirely to what they are right now. If Ruth Bader Ginsburg retires or dies, then it would be the same because he would replace her with another liberal. But if Ginsburg goes and Scalia goes, then the balance turns entirely in the opposite direction where we have a majority of liberals. And the largest aspect of all of this is that any appointments that happen, whether they come from Mitt Romney or Barack Obama, they're going to be in there for a generation because we're talking about younger people, people who are 10, 20 years away from retirement. You know, that's going to be devastating, if Mitt Romney wins this election from the Supreme Court aspect alone. I mean, I don't want to consider the impact of that. We got to take another break back after this. Show today brought to you by BubbleGenius.com, as it is every week. They're our exclusive sponsor, as you can tell by the title of our show. And here's the latest Halloween word from Bubble Genius.
Hello, welcome to Bubble Genius.
Hey, yeah, I'm looking for something for my ma, like a present. She likes stuff that smells real nice.
Oh, okay, let's see. We have lots of lovely bath and body treats. Something for everyone. How about make like a tree?
Make like a tree? Sheesh, some service. Make like a tree? Hey, why don't you take a long walk off a short pier?
It's our make like a tree soap. A set of 8 mini soap leaves in a delightful, spicy, woodsy scent.
Leaves that lather up?
Yup! And like all of our spectacular soaps, they're 100% vegan-friendly and handmade right here in the U.S. of A.
Soap? That does smell real good. Hey, you're not saying my mom smells, are you? Wait.
Oh, no, of course not. You said she likes stuff that smells real nice. And if there's one thing we've got, it's a huge selection of scrumptious-smelling suds.
Well, all right then. Just so you're not. All right, give me one of them. Makes like trees. And wrap it up real pretty.
You got it. Bubble Genius, where there's something for everyone. Handmade by us in the U.S.
BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
And don't forget, your promo code is Bob and Chez, BobAndChez. And you want to enter that at checkout at BubbleGenius.com and get 15% off your entire order of all your yummy heart-shaped soaps. New Associated Press GFK poll finds that Mitt Romney has erased President Obama's 16-point advantage among women. It's astonishing to me. But conversely, the president has largely eliminated Romney's edge among men.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could be. One of the theories is that Romney going all peacenik during the third debate, and the president being, defending his foreign policy record, which is pretty strong. Those two competing aspects have shifted the gender gap. So I just, considering what we've been talking about so far on the show, I find it amazing that any woman, especially women of reproductive age, could walk into a voting booth and vote for Mitt Romney.
Yeah, I mean, it never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah. We'll talk about polls a little bit, or we can talk about the debate. A quick word about the third debate, which I had a pretty glowing review of the second debate. I thought that third debate was even better.
The third debate was a blowout. The third debate was unequivocally in Obama's column.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
He was excellent from start to finish.
I have a lot of issues with the media, especially the cable news media. I don't get how Mitt Romney got away with that performance and without people just ripping their hair out and screaming about him just melting on stage. I mean, I'm not just talking about the Nixon sweating that he was doing. I'm just talking about, I think Mitt Romney was actually, in some ways, kind of worse than the president was from the first debate. I mean, he was scattered. He was, he didn't project any sort of command of foreign policy. Rachel Maddow, in fact, did a great segment about how Mitt Romney doesn't even seem interested in foreign policy. He didn't even pretend to be interested in foreign policy in that debate.
Yeah, I think it was Kornacki over at Salon said the same thing. Said that he knew going into it that he's going to get his ass beat. So he just it looked like he didn't care.
No, he just didn't. He didn't. And so he was,
or as Bill Maher said, the best line of the night. Romney's strategy seemed to be to point at Obama and say what he said, but from a white guy.
Yeah, Romney just seemed emasculated throughout the entire hour and a half debate. I find it remarkable that there's not a significant contra Romney first debate bounce happening with the president where things bounce in the other direction. I don't understand how it works. Romney gets a massive, I mean, unprecedented bounce out of that. When the converse situation occurs, whatever. Crickets chirping.
Well, if what you're talking about is true, then that very well could go to what I said a while back, which is that there may be people out there, there may be sort of quote unquote undecideds or sort of tepid Obama supporters who have been looking for a reason to vote for Romney. You know, I mean, and quite frankly, he hadn't given them one until that first debate. He'd given them nothing. It was nothing but gaffes and screw ups. And, I'm not saying this is correct, but that was one of the questions that I asked. I'm like, are there people out there who basically, you know, and then, of course, the follow up to that is, if that's true, is any of the reason for that, does it have to do with the insanity that the right has wrought over the past 4 years? You know, are there people, and I know, again, you and I have talked about this, I know, this attitude that, there have to be people out there who've watched what's happened, even people who aren't sort of, you know, political diehards, who've watched the craziness that's happened over the past, politically over the past 4 years, and just said, you know what, forget it. If having this guy in office means that we have to go through this kind of insanity, then never again.
I think that's possible. Anyone who has been following the election, let's just say maybe just the past year, maybe just since the beginning of 2012, and then saw and sort of they're lukewarm on Romney, and then just saw 90 minutes and just completely turned on a dime to support Mitt Romney. Those people are idiots.
Of course,
those people are idiots because I mean I find it just unfathomable that the one guy's fortunes could change so drastically based on 90 minutes, considering the months upon months, if not years, of experience we've had observing Mitt Romney.
People have very short memories now. Our attention spans are. I've talked about this so many times. This is an ongoing theme on the blog and stuff I've written for Huffington and Daily Banter. I mean, we have produced a media culture now that is so rapid fire that our attention spans are 24 hours. 24 hours on and 140 characters.
Yeah.
People, you know, it's funny. I brought up a. I posted on the blog a few days ago a comment from Romney from back in 2010 from his No Apology ridiculous book, where he said that you know, we just have to accept that certain multiculturalism is a lie. Certain cultures are superior, and we as Americans are superior. You know, we're and I put it up again because I thought I'm like, look. You know, this is something I just happened to stumble across while I was going back through the archive looking for something. And it dawned on me that, you know, this was 2 years ago. 2 years ago. And people just forget. They forget that he said these things. People, I guarantee you, have already forgotten that insane world tour that he went on where he insulted everybody and screwed up, you know, proved easily that he was going to screw up foreign policy. They forget the 47%. They forget that the guy who sat up there and talked about the Palestinians and peace and this and that is the same guy who said that we need to kick the can down the road. I mean, people forget everything. They just
They really do. And at the most critical time in sort of, you know, kind of the most important, it gets thrown around a lot in terms of description. But they're forgetting about things, really important things, during the most important time to actually try to remember them. Because, I mean, you know, there are so many things at stake in this election. So, I mean, we're talking about human rights. That's what's at stake here. And if they're forgetting crap this guy said a couple of months ago, in some cases, a couple of days ago, in some cases, seconds earlier. Because he had a really good debate night. But the opposite doesn't seem to be happening with Obama, and that's what I don't understand. We're so late for a break. One last break, and we'll come back right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Yeah, I mean, if people have a short attention span, it seems to me as if they should have a short one about the president too, right?
Oh, they should, yeah.
Because, and again, what I'm getting at is I'm trying to compare the reaction to the president's two commanding victories in debates versus Romney's one commanding victory surrounded by a bunch of other awkward, jittery gaffes and crap.
Right. Here's the thing. I think that the second debate, even though he came back much stronger, I think the media narrative on that was that he did come back much stronger, but that, you know, Romney wasn't, you know, the instant reaction to that was that Romney did pretty good too. So Obama beat him, but didn't beat him by much. This last time around, yeah, he kicked the crap out of him. But, you know, there were people who said that we're getting so close to the election that there really may very well be people who have kind of made up their mind. And, you know, and look, as much as people are trying to call attention to the fact that Romney is just an A1 bullshit artist. You know, that he's absolutely making up crap as he goes.
By the way, did you see the president said that about Romney?
What?
The president, you know, basically called Mitt Romney, he literally called Mitt Romney a bullshitter. Mm. Yeah. He said, President Obama sat for an interview with Rolling Stones for next month's issue. It's a story by Douglas Brinkley. And here's the excerpt. As we arrived at the Oval Office for our 45-minute interview on the morning of October 11th, as we left the Oval Office, executive editor Eric Bates told Obama that he had asked his 6-year-old if there was anything she wanted him to say to the president. She said, "Tell him you can do it." Obama grinned. "You know, kids have good instincts," Obama offered. "They look at the other guy and say, 'Well, that's a bullshitter. I can tell.'"
I love it.
So anyway, so that's a sorry, I sidetracked you.
No,
yeah,
no,
I mean, Romney, yeah, and Romney is very much one.
Right, but people fall for it. They just do.
Yeah,
they believe what they want to believe. And, you know, Romney very well could be to a lot of people. I mean, I look at – people look at him and think, you know, straight out of central casting. You know, a businessman. I love it when people say that. He's a successful businessman. I'm like, yeah, if the yardstick you use to measure success is somebody who is basically a soulless corporate raider who busts out businesses and sends the profits overseas along with, you know, along with quite a few workers.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's my issue with Romney. My original sin that I always go back to, and this is the thing that just leaves me flabbergasted, just freaking stunned, is the idea that, you know, 4 years after a collapse, after the second worst economic collapse this country's ever seen, and probably the worst global collapse the world has seen, mm-hmm. with you know, far-reaching ramifications that we're still trying to clean up, that we are actually considering, there are people out there who think it's okay to put somebody who was the living embodiment of that ethos that got us into that mess into the White House.
And maybe they were just looking for an excuse to go with that guy, some sort of legitimate reason to grasp onto. And some of these voters thought, well, he comported himself well during that debate, so there's our excuse, there's our opening.
That's
bam,
what I mean.
We're pushing. But you know what? I think, and you know, it's interesting to look at the polls too, because the president dropped and Romney rose. But now Romney has kind of flatlined and the president is rising again.
Right. Well, so that's the president that, and that can happen. As I've said over and over again, the way the media cycle works these days, if it's a somewhat close election, you know, and usually it tends to be, considering, you know, the sort of division of politics in this country. But what's going to happen is it turns into a game of musical chairs. Whoever happens to grab the chair when the music stops, that's the person who wins.
Yeah.
Whoever happens to be close, really, whoever's closest to the chair when the music stops.
Because these things, I mean, these things seem to be turning just on a dime. At any moment, things could shift and turn the other way. There's just no way to kind of know at this point what is going to happen in God, just a little over a week from now.
One of the rare times that, you know, I'm willing to pat myself on the back is I was right about one very, very big thing, which is when a lot of people were really counting Romney out. You know, this is where he lost the election. Oh, Obama's pulling so far ahead. I'm like, do not do that, because anything can happen, and anything can happen. To me, not something huge. I'm really looking at it from the media and the media narrative perspective. And anything can happen. The media narrative can change in a second, and that's enough to win over the dumbest people on earth.
Yeah, it really is.
Especially the undecided voters, who we all know, you know, as I wrote yesterday, and I know a couple other people have said this, the media cast these undecided voters like, you know, they're these politically astute sages who are sitting in their study with their furrowed brow and their pipe in their mouth, poring over each of these candidates' records, because they know that no less than the most important decision in the world rests on my shoulders. That's the way the media portrays them. And the fact is, these people are morons. If you haven't made up your mind by now. And it also could be, by the way, that since we are getting closer, the undecideds are really finally becoming decided. But yeah, you know what? If 3 weeks ago you were somebody who didn't know, who was going to vote, but didn't know whether you were going to vote for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, you're a freaking moron. You really are.
Yeah. You know, that bump for Romney was huge out of that first debate, but it's not lasting. It's not lasting into the election. And it's kind of, and the president has kind of picked up a lot of steam here, regardless of what you might hear as far as any sort of momentum. And that,
you know, the other thing that's possible is that, you know, you see this a lot. People are really getting exhausted. I mean, this is,
yeah,
this is just a beat you over the head with a 2x4 process. Now, Matt Taibbi hit it on the head when he said, we really need to have elections that, you know, that really only lasts 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just, at this point, we're so drawn out, and it really has become so vicious that there are people out there who are just like, look, I just want it over. Now, the possibility, though, is that if the polls really are reflecting sort of a change back to Obama, if that's true, then it could be interesting, because what it could prove is that in the end, after all the insanity, the polls revert to where they were, you know, a month, 2 months ago.
Well, the fact of the matter is that the national polls changed a lot, you know, in Romney's favor after the first debate. But that, I mean, you want to talk about something that people should kind of shut up about? as far as future elections go, national polling. Because national polling, all it does, it gives you a sense of where the entire country is. Doesn't give you any idea in terms of who's going to actually win. Because then, for that, you need to go to the state-by-state polls. And state-by-state, the president has always led as far as polling as it relates to the Electoral College. The president has always been ahead. There was maybe one very brief period of time where he dropped below 270, but Mitt Romney was far below 270. I mean, at this point, at this stage in the game, the president can actually lose Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, New Hampshire, and Colorado. Those big five states, all of which he won in 2008. He could lose all of those states and still win with 277 electoral votes. But that's only, of course, if he wins Iowa, Ohio, Nevada, and Wisconsin, along with all of the traditionally blue states. Right. So all of those states, I mean, because of that first debate or whatever effed up reason, the president could lose Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, New Hampshire, Colorado, and still win because, you know, he's got it locked up in places like Ohio and Nevada, New Mexico, you know. We've spent a lot of time talking about those national polls and how they really showed a big bounce for Romney. And some of the national polls like Gallup and Rasmussen are still showing a bit of a lead for Romney. It's dwindling by the day, but still it's got Romney, you know, around 50% and the president around, you know, 47, something like that. Both Gallup and Rasmussen. But then you go state by state. Obama's leading in Nevada. Obama's leading in New Hampshire. Obama's leading by a lot in Ohio. I mean, the latest polls, Old Dominion University and Newsmax has the president leading in Virginia. And the latest polling in, or at least according to the poll tracker at Talking Points Memo, president is it's all tied up in Florida. Mm-hmm. And plus the president's starting to lead in nationally as well. Go to Nate Silver. You can see the trends as far as his prediction model goes. President's always been ahead, according to Nate Silver. And now some of the polling averages, Talking Points Memo again, as I said, Real Clear Politics, pollster over at Huffington Post, all showing the president regaining the lead nationally. But of course, that's, again, just totally irrelevant. And one of the reasons is this Rasmussen. In fact, the Vote Master just did a study of Rasmussen to determine whether or not there was a bias leaning towards Republicans. And there is. There's a 1.91 point bias in favor of the Republicans. So basically, every Rasmussen poll that you look at, the president is actually doing 2 points better than what Rasmussen says. And that's an independent, nonpartisan voting analysis or polling analysis.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting because Taibbi's other point in that same piece was that polls, I think you and I have spoken about this, polls should be banned. No, I mean, they can be taken, but it should be basically out of bounds for news outlets to report on polls because that's all they report on. His attitude is if you ban the polls, if you basically say there are no polls, then that forces the media outlets to actually focus on the issues and focus on something important.
Yeah, but they wouldn't. They wouldn't.
No, of course they wouldn't. It'd be more gotcha crap.
Yeah, it'd be gotcha crap. They'd be focusing on the fundraising. They'd be talking about, who won the day, who had the best zinger, you know, where they're going, you know, where the candidates are going on the map. You know, oh, Romney visited Ohio 5 times. He must be desperate to win Ohio. Oh, but Obama's been to New Mexico 3 times. I thought New Mexico was locked up. Oh, well, my God, Mitt Romney's going to Michigan. Michigan must be in play. You know, so it's like then it turns into they'll never talk about issues unless you actually force them to. But what they'll end up doing is they'll fabricate some other metric to talk about the horse race.
Yeah, because that is all they do. My attitude is I'm just very, very eager for next week election day to come and go so that America can once again return to not giving a crap about Ohio.
Right. Well, I want to talk about that a little bit more, just my sort of broad stroke view of the process right now. I want to talk about that on the after party. And we're going to get actually just speaking of the after party, we're going to talk about a bunch of it, with probably a little bit of politics are going to bleed over in the after party because we're not going to get to everything that we wanted to talk about. We're also going to talk about the fact that my blog was hacked.
Yes.
We're going to get into that quite deeply. Plus, the demise of the Breitbart legacy. Mm. It was a great piece in BuzzFeed that I want to talk about.
I didn't see that.
Plus, you know, I meant to talk about this last week, the ongoing saga of Ghostbusters 3.
Yeah, Murray's out.
Yeah,
now.
We're going to be talking about that on the after party. Plus, my favorite bit of new meme audio. There was one of our favorite memes going around for several years now, and there's a new addition to it that's probably the funniest one yet. We're going to get to that on the after party. So all that's coming up. Let's see. Oh, yeah. CNN gets the Worst Persons in the World award for the week. Your old employers. Did you see this story, how they ran a story? I think it was – I want to say it was
– Yeah. It was on CNN.com, the menstrual – how periods affect how women vote.
Yeah. Yeah. Like their menstruals is like how their hormones will affect their voting choices. As if women are the only gender of human being that has hormones.
The only thing I care about is how their hormones affect how likely I am to get a drink thrown in my face.
You know, I saw, I went and clicked on this. I wanted to read the story. And instead of the actual piece there, I wanted to see how ridiculous it was. Instead of the actual piece, there was a post that just said, "Post removed. Study looks at voting and hormones. A post previously posted in this space regarding a study about how hormones may influence voting choices has been removed." So it's like this weird, ridiculous, hastily written sentence.
Yeah, it said. I don't know, probably not that one, but eventually they put up one that said, "We determined that it doesn't meet CNN standards," or
that's
something
right.
like that.
Yeah, yeah. And after further review, it was determined that some elements of the story did not meet the editorial standards of CNN. We thank you for your comments and feedback.
Which we know what their editorial standards are, besides maybe Soledad and Anderson.
I mean, what on earth would? I mean, I'm just trying to think of the mindset, the deductive reasoning that would determine, you know what, it's a pretty good idea for a story. It's not going to piss anybody off. Considering that, you know, women's reproductive issues have been a centerpiece, a flashpoint, especially recently, and especially in the context of the election.
Was it a study? I don't know. I only know like the sort of very, very, you know, basics of it.
Well, I think it was a study.
Right.
See, the article also stated the most controversial part of the study is not that hormonal cycles are linked to women's preferences for candidates and voting behaviors, but also that single women who are ovulating are more likely to be socially liberal.
Okay.
You know what that's like? You know what this story is like? Black people are better at sports. You know, that's
thank you, Jimmy the Greek.
But that's kind of the same mindset.
It is, right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I can see where somebody with their head up their ass would look at that and say, "Oh, it's a study," because if there's one thing that news departments love, it's a study. It's something they can point to and draw statistical significance from one study.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's also symptomatic of this broader, I don't know what it is. It's a psychosis in the press, traditional press, where, you know, if they got, you know, a guy who says the sky's blue, they got to dig some study up, some guy, some quacks, you know, sitting in a tub of tapioca with his rubber pants around his ankles, who says, "Oh, no, sky's not blue, sky's orange."
Right.
"Don't you see? It's orange for like 2 seconds. Now is the sun setting. That means the sky," you know, and then they've got to have a debate about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely ridiculous. So anyway, so that's the CNN story. And the other worst persons in the world, Texas. The state of Texas has threatened to arrest UN election observers on election day.
I saw that.
Oh, we're a bunch of yickadoo rubes in this country, I swear to God. It's unbelievable. So like I said, coming up in the after party, a little bit more politics, I want to talk about Obama's closing argument. It's interesting, interesting tidbit about Benghazi and our consulates and embassies around the world. We're going to talk about that. Oh, and specifically having to do with the Republican Party. We're going to talk about that in the After Party. That's coming up tomorrow. If you're not a subscriber to the After Party, make sure to go to the website and subscribe. It's only $6 a month. You can cancel at any time. You just need to have the PayPal. That's it. So go and do it if you want to hear some extra special talking from us, especially how I feel personally about the election. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely, and we'll see you tomorrow. Bye.